Chapter 5. Clint Saves Bucky. There Are Some Tears. "Really, Clint?" Tasha asks, grabbing him by the hair and yanking him out of the brawl she just found him in. "Again?" He spits some blood onto the ground, wincing as the movement splits his lip all over again. "He was asking for it," Clint mumbles, trying to talk around his loose tooth. "No, you're just drunk and spoiling for a fight." She releases his hair and glares at him. "You have been ever since—" "Don't," Clint snaps. "You know I don't do drunk." She inclines her head after a second, the only apology he's going to get. "And this has nothing to do with that. I'm just restless, Tosh." "You're also missing your merman," she says, ignoring his growl. "Look, just because you haven't seen him since then doesn't mean anything, Clint. The ocean is a big place." "Not that big," Clint mutters petulantly, limping up the gangplank. He stops dead when he sees the scene at the top. "What?" Tasha comes to a dead stop beside him, and Clint completely forgets the pain he's in, jaw dropping open. Wanda, Shuri, Kate, and America. They picked up America at a little port a few years back, when she stowed away in their cargo hold, only to burst out when she heard Kate screaming in the night. Kate was screaming because Thor was swinging her around wildly, but America thought she was in danger. They still tease her about it to this day. The four girls are tangled up in a mess of limbs, sprawled in front of the wheel, cursing up a storm as they try to free themselves without injuring each other. Pietro's nowhere to be seen, but a flurry of curses reaches Clint's ears and it's coming from the other side of the ship, from the water. Bruce is behind Thor, looking exasperated, and Thor is holding a giant fork, pointing it at Steve, Clint says in shock. "Clint, there you are," Steve says. He gestures at Thor, who's still holding the giant fork. "Can you tell your muscle here to give me back my trident so I can tell you what I came here to say?" Clint nods at Thor, and he lowers the trident. "Damn, Steve," Clint says, walking across the deck. "You got big." Steve flushes, hoisting himself onto a crate. "Yeah, well, turns out that accepting the kingship when you're as scrawny as I was has some effects." "Kingship?" "Yeah," Steve says, sighing. "King Stephen Grant of the Brooklyn tribe, at your service." He does a little bow, and Clint snorts. "Well, your majesty, it's an honor to have you aboard our humble ship," Natasha says dryly. "Yeah, yeah," Steve says, rolling his eyes. He leans forward, intently staring at Clint. "Clint, we found him." "Found who?" Clint asks. Steve blinks. "Bucky." "Bucky's missing," Clint asks, snapping to attention. You didn't know?" Steve asks, sitting back in shock. Clint shakes his head. "Steve, the last time I saw Bucky was 7 years ago, when I pulled him out of a rock slide." "Did he have guppies with him?" The intensity in Steve's voice is kind of worrying, and Clint's starting to come up with worst-case scenarios. "Yeah, 3. Why?" Steve sighs and scrubs a hand over his face. "Clint, they never made it back to us." His words hit Clint like a mass to the chest, and he stumbles backwards, leaning heavily on Thor for support. "I saw them," he chokes out. "They were fine, laughing at my silly faces, and Bucky did this thing with his nose. Steve, they were fine." Steve watches him sympathetically, too far away to reach out and comfort him. "It's not your fault, Clint," he says gently. "It's not like you could have followed him. There's nothing you could have done." "Yeah? And how often have those words made you feel better over the years, Steve?" Clint spits, immediately regretting it. Steve sighs. "You're right, and I'm sorry. The important thing is that we found him." "Where?" Clint says, pulling himself together. Steve shoots him a look, but Clint ignores it, focused only on finding Bucky. "Steve, where?" "My kind calls it, well, your words for it are Death Island. My tribe has been losing Mers, both fully grown and guppies there for ages, since before my mother took the kingship." Steve shakes his head. "We tell all our guppies to stay away from it. I don't know why Bucky would have gone anywhere near it. He knows better than that." "We can ask him when we find him," Clint says determinedly, mind already racing. "How far is this place from here?" Steve blinks. "Clint, you don't have to come. I was just letting you know and—" "Steve," Clint interrupts, voice low. "If you think for 1 second I am not coming with you, you are not a very good judge of character." Steve looks at him, and he must find what he's looking for, because he nods and says, "And them?" gesturing to the rest of the crew. "Where Clint goes, I go," Kate pipes up, and America nods from beside her, grabbing a hold of Kate's hand and staring defiantly. "I will not desert our captain now," Thor says sullenly. "He took me and my love in when we had nowhere. I would help him rescue his love." Wanda, Pietro, and Shuri say nothing, just nodding at him once. When he looks at Tasha, she scoffs. "Like you even have to ask." "Fine, they can all come," Steve says, exasperated. "We're going to need all the help we can get. Give us 2 hours to get supplies. We'll follow you out then." Clint scoops Steve up in his arms, barely grunting at how much heavier he is, and strides over to the rail. "Clint, you can't throw me overboard. I'm a king now." Steve's protests are cut off with a squawk as Clint tosses him overboard, barely cracking a smile when Steve hits the water with a curse and a splash. "What do we do, Captain?" Shuri says, standing and pulling Wanda up with her. Clint takes a deep breath. "Kate, America, get all the weapons that this ship can carry and toss them in the armory. Something tells me we're going to need them. Thor, Pietro, take everything that can be spared and get it off this ship. There's a storage building in town. Buy a space and put it there. I don't care how much coin it costs. Bruce, stock up on medical supplies. I don't know what shape Bucky's going to be in when we find him, and there are likely going to be other Murrs that will be injured. I'm not leaving a single Murr behind on that island." "And me?" Natasha asks, flipping a knife over her knuckles. "You remember the village of Buddha, over in Pest?" Clint asks. She blinks. "As if I could forget." A smile spreads across Clint's face. It's not a nice smile. "I need 10 times that." "Consider it done," she says, and hops off the crate she was perched on. When she passes him, she puts a gentle hand on his cheek and murmurs, "We will find him. We have to find him." With that, his crew, his family, heads into town to follow his orders. Clint allows himself 5 seconds to shake apart, then another 5 to stick his tattered pieces back together, and then he's heading below decks. 2 flights of stairs and a hidden door later, he's deep in the bowels of the Avenger, deeper than he has been in years. He blows some dust off an old box, fingers trailing over the deeply colored cloth inside and the rip in the shoulder crusted with dried blood. "Hello, old friend," he murmurs, coming to a stop in front of an innocuous wooden box, engraved only with a simple arrow. Steeling himself, he pulls out his old bow, turning it over in his hands gently. "Been a while." His voice fills the dusty old room, excruciatingly loud to his ears even though his voice is barely above a whisper. Falling silent, Clint pulls the small tin of whale blubber out of the box and greases the bow until it makes no sound when he draws. Closing the box gently, Clint stoops to pick up another box, this one full of arrows. "For Bucky," he says, and then he leaves, the only indication he was ever there a slight disturbance in the dust. He's a little worried that his skill will have downgraded. It's been years since he last shot a bow. And sure enough, his first shot is off. Not by much, but by enough that it would have earned him a beating back when, well, back when he didn't have a family he chose, full of people who loved him, who couldn't give one single shit about whether the arrow was a finger's breadth off from dead center. He falls into the familiar space in his head, the one where emotions are distant and he can look at things without being influenced by them. Realistically, Clint knows why he put down his bow all those years ago. He spent hours upon hours upon hours shooting and shooting until his hands were bloody and he could barely keep his eyes open. It's a miracle he didn't shoot someone. If Nat hadn't taken his bow away from him and forced him into his bed, well, he owes Nat a lot, that's all. A couple years ago, he heard from some drunk in a bar that the Cirque capsized, the survivors picked up by the Royal Navy and jailed. He didn't know how to feel about it then, and he doesn't know how to feel about it now, but there's a tiny part of him that's viciously glad the Cirque is at the bottom of the ocean, along with that stupid tank. Emotionally, Clint hated every second his bow was locked up in the depths of the Avenger, and the second it's back in his hands, something deep inside him uncoils, and tension he didn't even know he was carrying drops off his shoulders. The longer he shoots, the more he relaxes, until he's so relaxed that he doesn't even turn around when he hears Kate and America stomp up the gangplank. "All right, Clint, we got everything we could find. Holy shit!" Kate stops dead beside him, mouth wide open. "No way you shot all those," she exclaims, gesturing at the crate he was using as a target. It's bristling with arrows, some sunk so deep into the wood that only the fletching is visible, and Clint shrugs. "I've had practice," he says quietly, and he moves towards the crate to pull them out. With how he suspects things are going to go, he'll need all the ammo he can get his hands on. "Do it again," she demands petulantly, and she's got that look on her face that means she's not going to leave him alone until he does what she wants. So Clint sighs, knocks another arrow, and fires, never looking away from her face. He hears the thunk of the arrow hitting his target, and Kate's mouth drops even further open, if that's possible, and she starts stammering. "Come on, princess," America says, inclining her head at Clint. "Let's leave Clint alone so he can gather his ammo." "Did you see what he did? That was the coolest thing I've ever seen!" Kate's babbling fades away as her and America head below decks to start storing the weaponry, and Clint indulges in a smirk, a teeny part of him relishing the praise. Thor and Pietro are back next, carrying a rolled-up message with their lot number from the storage place on it. "It is good to see you with your weapon of choice again, my friend." Thor claps him on the shoulder, nearly making his knees buckle. Pietro scoffs. "Bah, you probably couldn't hit an apple off my head with that thing, old man." "I'll hit you in the head if you don't go help Kate and America with the weapons," Clint threatens with a smirk. Pietro goes. Back next is Bruce, loaded down with medical supplies. Thor rushes to go help his other half, and Bruce nods at Clint as they pass him by. Finally, Tasha comes back, sauntering up the gangplank empty-handed. Before Clint can say anything, she lets loose a shrill whistle, and three well-muscled guys come running onto the Avenger, carrying crates on their backs. "Put those in the hold," Tasha instructs, and they obey without a word. "Gently," she calls after them, and their footsteps slow slightly. Clint opens his mouth to say something, but she holds up a hand and lets out another whistle. A fourth guy comes up the gangplank, carefully holding a box that looks frighteningly familiar. "Tasha," Clint says, voice slightly shaky. She shushes him, taking the box from the stranger, tucking some coin into his hand, and ushering him off the ship. "If we are going to save your merman," she says, "you are going to need all the ammo you can get your hands on." She pushes the box into his hands, then leaves him alone on the deck. He stares at the box in his hands, knuckles white as he holds it. He's not sure why he's having such a reaction to it, but it's probably because this might be the first time he's ever received something to do with his archery in a positive way. Regardless, he doesn't have time to deal with it. He puts the box to the side, shaking his head to rid himself of the fog of memories using his bow has brought. Slowly, his crew trickles back above deck, surrounding him in a loose circle. "Anyone who doesn't want to come with us to save Bucky," Clint says, looking them each in the eye. "Leave now." No one moves. "He's our family too, Clint," Wanda says softly. Clint nods. "All right, I'm not gonna lie, this is going to suck. You'll probably get hurt, you'll definitely see others get hurt, and there's a halfway decent chance you'll see someone die. None of this is going to be pretty, and I won't blame any of you if you would rather stay back here with Bruce. There's no shame in that." He's not surprised when Wanda raises her hand, but he is a little surprised when Shuri does as well. "I've seen too much blood and death in my time," she says, and Clint nods. "You'll both be helping Bruce with medical. I'll let him assign you further." A shout grabs Clint's attention, and he pokes his head over the side to see Steve and Tony, as well as an unfamiliar Murr, waiting for him. "You ready to go, human?" Tony calls. Clint can see him twitching from where he's standing. "Yeah, how we doing this?" he shouts back, and then Steve makes a complicated gesture with his trident, and the unfamiliar Murr shoots up a geyser of water, landing with a thump on the deck. "My name is Virginia," the Murr says. "You may call me Pepper. I am one of His Majesty's most trusted advisors, and I will be guiding you on this journey to rescue James." "I'm Clint," he says, and he pokes his head back over the rail, raising an eyebrow at Steve. "Hey, Pepper's terrifying," Steve says, shrugging. "She's also competent as shit and scary to boot." "I'll make sure not to piss her off then," Clint says dryly, and Steve and Tony vanish under the waves. "Shall we get underway?" Clint asks, and Pepper directs him to head east, away from the setting sun. In the end, it takes them 2 days to reach Death Island. There's a small rocky outcropping far enough away that they can dock there without fear of being seen, so they disembark there to meet with Steve. It might be the oddest war council Clint's ever been to, not that he's been to many war councils. Half the attendees are human, standing or kneeling in the water, submerged only to their knees. The other half are Murrs, sitting in the water awkwardly, their top halves out of the water. "We cannot possibly trust them," one Murr says, sneering at Clint. "They're humans. Humans are the ones that took James." Yeah, and us humans are the ones that are going to help you get him back. So why don't you stop wasting time and get on with the damn rescue plan already? Kate says furiously. How dare you speak to me that way? The Mer puffs out their chest and glares. Do you have any idea who I am? Considering where you've been placed and how every other Mer here has been glaring at you behind your back for the last 10 minutes while you bluster on about how this should be a Mer-only mission, Natasha cuts in smoothly, not even looking up from her knife. We do not need to know who you are, because you are unimportant. Now shush, dear, the adults are talking. I like her, Tony whispers to Pepper. Pepper grins. It's terrifying. Good, Steve starts, relief clear in his voice. Here's the plan. Clint's shoulders are aching. He's been firing his bow practically nonstop for the last hour, and somehow he still hasn't run out of arrows. Fuck, he owes Natasha big time. Something flashes out of the corner of his eye, and he knocks and looses an arrow, barely even taking a breath. His arrow flies true, slamming into the skull of someone about to bury an axe in Thor's back. Thor grins feralely at him, blood spattered and vicious, then dives back into the fray. Clint fights his way through a throng of men, using his bow as a staff and bashing in heads. He leaves a trail of bodies in his wake, rarely leaving any alive. At some point, Tasha joins him, blood smeared over her cheek and a wild grin on her face. It's terrifying, and Clint falls in love with her just a little bit more seeing it. Shall we go find your boy? She asks, slitting a throat and stepping neatly out of the way of the spray of blood. After you, my lady, Clint says, bowing. She smirks at him and curtsies delicately, then promptly jams her dagger into a stomach, downing the poor fellow. With Tasha at his side, Clint fights like he's never fought before. Except maybe in Buddha, but that's a whole other story. And soon enough, they make their way to the center of the island, a large building with bars on the windows and 3-foot-thick stone walls. Go, Tasha says, and Clint pulls the explosive out of his pocket and molds it to the doorframe. Down, Clint murmurs, and he and Tasha roll out of the way behind a boulder, avoiding the blast by the skin of their teeth. Bring him home, Clint, Tasha says, grabbing Clint's chin in her hand. As if I'd leave without him, Clint swears, and then he leaves her behind, swinging his bow over his shoulder, pulling out his gleaming swords and stalking into the building like death incarnate, ready to storm the gates of hell to get what is his. Pietro joins him, but Clint barely spares him a glance, completely focused on saving Bucky. He reaches the first cell and finds a small child, human in appearance, but something about the ice-cold blue of their eyes has Clint shivering. He breaks the lock on the door, shatters the chains around their ankle, and sends them out of the building. The next cell contains a Mer, nearly all the way dried out, and Clint sets Pietro for bringing them back to the ship for medical. The two cells after that contain only bodies, both Mer, and Clint makes a note to come back for them so he can return them to Steve for whatever burial rites the Mer have. He scratches an X in the door so he knows what's inside and moves on. In the fourth cell, Clint finds a Mer that's still alive, but only barely. The Mer's tail has been cut off just below the waist, fairly recently, and there was no attempt to bandage the wound. Please, the Mer croaks, reaching out for Clint weakly. I'm sorry this was done to you, Clint says quietly. Let me bring you peace. Thank you, the Mer breathes, and right before Clint's sword sinks into their heart, an expression of bliss crosses their face. Clint lets himself shed a few tears, but then he shoves the sorrow down and moves on. There's nothing like that in any of the other rooms, thankfully, but when Clint comes across some young guppies, looking about 8 years old, he hesitates. And then he makes a face. It surprises a laugh out of one of them, and then they look curiously at him. Clint, they say slowly. Yeah, that's me, Clint says, nearly crying in relief. You know where Bucky is? Bucky, a different guppy says, and that one reaches out and grabs Clint's hand, clearly intending to lead him to Bucky. Clint hesitates, but he has no choice but to allow it. As reluctant as he is to bring a child with him, he doesn't know his way around, and the child will be with him, safe. Pietro, get these guppies to safety. Pietro lifts the two guppies under his arms, the act made easier by how underweight they are. I'll bring this one out when we find Bucky, Clint says, and Pietro nods. Clint scoops up the third guppy into his arms and follows the tugs on his sleeve, eventually coming to a stone door. Bucky, the guppy says insistently, pointing at the door. Yeah, I know, honey, Clint says softly. I need you to cover your ears, okay? The guppy looks at him, confused. Clint brings the guppy's hand to their ears and presses. "Cover," he says slowly. The guppy nods at him, then buries their head in Clint's chest. Clint sets out the explosive, then darts around the corner, protecting himself and the guppy from the blast. Coughing, Clint runs inside the newly opened room, eyes darting around frantically. A groan draws his attention and he races over to a lab table, eyes lighting with relief when he sees Bucky. Underweight, down an arm, fuck, and looking sick as shit, but alive. "Bucky, hey, you with me?" Clint asks, undoing the restraints on Bucky's arm and tail. "Clint," Bucky asks groggily, unable to focus on Clint's face. The guppy in Clint's arms whimpers at the sight of Bucky, reaching out to him. "Bucky," they whine, and then start babbling in the MERS native language. Bucky's confusion only grows, and he looks at Clint when the guppy starts to cry a little. "Hey, it's okay," Clint soothes, rubbing the guppy's back. "Bucky's okay, he's just a little sleepy right now, so you gotta be quiet, all right?" The guppy nods, hiccuping, and Clint shifts them around until he's got both arms free to lift Bucky. "Knew you'd come for me," Bucky slurs as Clint lifts him. He weighs about as much as he did when Clint was 15, and that's terrifying. "Never gave up on you, Clint," Bucky says, and then he goes limp in Clint's arms. Clint breaks into a run, quickly passing the rooms with the dead MERS in them and breaking free of the compound's walls within moments. He doesn't stop running, heading directly for his ship and Bruce. His feet pound up the gangplank, and he races below decks, skidding to a stop outside Bruce's makeshift medical room and gently depositing the guppy onto a small bed. "I'll be back, okay? I promise," Clint says, and that seems to calm the guppy as they stop crying and settle into the bed, watching him walk away with big eyes. "You found him?" Bruce asks, appearing at his side as Clint deposits Bucky onto a bed. "He's underweight, dehydrated, and I don't know how well his arm healed," Clint says, running a hand through his hair. "I've got him, Clint," Bruce says gently. "Go get something to eat. Take a moment to calm down." "I can't just leave him." "You can and you will," Bruce says firmly, cutting him off. "You'll only be in my way if you stay. Go tell Steve that you've found him. I'm sure he's worried sick." "Steve," Clint says blankly. He can feel himself shutting down. "Right." He doesn't remember walking out of the medical room, only faint flashes of walking past the guppy he saved, sleeping, stay in his memory. He doesn't remember how he gets to the shoreline, wading into the water and telling Steve that they've found him, that Bucky's alive. He does remember an older MER swimming up to him and pulling him into a hug, thanking him for saving her boy. Clint stands there, accepting the praise blankly, brushing off their thanks in a charming way, and when they're done, he walks behind a rock and vomits onto the ground. "It's over, Clint," Tasha says, her hand cool on the back of his neck. "We got him." "What if we were too late?" Clint croaks, his voice shot to shit after all the dust and other crap he probably swallowed while in the compound. "We weren't," Tasha says, and Clint almost believes her. They sit in silence for what feels like hours, keeping a vigil for the MER that Clint found dead, and the one he had to kill, until just before the sun rises, and Shuri comes running up to them, panting. "He's awake," she says, and Clint's off, sprinting towards the Avenger and keeping pace with Steve, who's going just as fast as him, only in the water. They reach the ship at the same time, and by the time Clint's pounded up the gangplank, Steve is waiting for him on the deck. Clint barely slows down as he scoops Steve up, and he doesn't apologize for the bumps that Steve gets as Clint careens down the stairs and around corners, but then Steve doesn't complain either. They burst through the door, and Bruce lifts his head from Bucky's arm wearily. "If you're going to be loud, you can leave," he says firmly. "None of these people need that right now." "Won't Bruce swear," Clint breathes, eyes glued to Bucky's unconscious figure. He deposits Steve onto a chair beside the tub and moves around to the other side. Bucky's face is gaunt, his cheekbones, all his bones for that matter, in sharp relief, standing out from his body like mountains. "Tell me he's going to be okay, Clint," Steve says shakily. Before Clint can respond, Bucky shifts on the table and opens his eyes. He blinks blearily, his head lolling to the side. When he sees Steve, his whole body tenses. "Stevie?" he asks, his voice barely recognizable. "Yeah, Buck," Steve says, eyes watering. "I'm here." "Thought it was a dream," Bucky says quietly, a tear running down his face. With visible effort, Bucky's head turns the other way, and when he meets Clint's eyes, he lets out a great, shuddery sob. "Knew you'd come," he rasps. "You always save me." "And I always will," Clint says, pressing his lips to Bucky's hand. "Get some rest, baby. You've got a long way to go." "As long as you're there with me," Bucky slurs, his eyes already drifting shut. Clint holds back a sob until he's sure Bucky's asleep, and then, hunched over Bucky's sleeping body, he breaks down into tears. Steve puts his hand over Clint and Bucky's, and the two of them cry until they can't cry anymore, their tears drying into tracks on their face. "Why were we leaking?" Steve asks hoarsely, once they're done. Despite himself, Clint snorts a laugh. It's called crying. Those were called tears. They're salt water, so you don't have them in the ocean. Humans cry when they're sad. "But I'm not sad," Steve says, confused. "We got Bucky back. I'm happy." "Yeah, well, humans cry when they're happy, too." "That's stupid," Steve says petulantly, and Clint laughs again. His shoulders are in agony, his throat hurts, and he's pretty sure he broke his finger when he broke an arrow off in some guy's nose, but this is the best Clint can remember feeling in years. He tightens his hold on Bucky's hand and breathes in deeply. It's over. They've got him. And Bucky's safe.